Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Governor Kasich said yesterday that he balanced the budget without tricks, without smoke and mirrors.
So instead of looking through the lens of an $8 billion deficit with a general revenue fund budget that's only $26 billion, we decided to look at the other 50% of Ohio's budget, which means that it was necessary to take $4 billion out in the first year out of a $52 billion budget. You know, for all of us, even if we're not good in math, 52 is a lot bigger than 26. So we did it in an unconventional way, in a way we should have been doing it in this state for many years.
All right. So, unconventional. How so? I invited the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler to tell us all the answers. Karen, you were good in math in high school, weren't you?
Which is why I'm a journalist, yes. No.
So what does he mean by unconventional? Is it unconventional, or is it beyond unconventional,
It is unconventional because, I mean, I can't tell you how many times in the last, I don't know, couple of weeks that I've said, well, that's the first time I've seen that before, because in the last couple of weeks, it's just been one surprise after another in terms of how things have been going at the State House and this new administration, these new measures that have been taken in the legislature, and now this new budget. And I think, you know, when he talks about being unconventional, he's talking about taking funds. You know, there are different budgets out there. There's the general revenue fund budget, which is the main one we're talking about here. But there's other budgets. There's the transportation budget. There's the capital improvements budget. There's all these other budgets. And he's talking about taking money from other budgets to help sustain this budget, and also drawing down a lot more federal dollars to help Ohio with Medicaid, which is a huge part of the budget. So that's what I think he means by unconventional. And certainly in this environment, what he also means is that there's not going to be any more federal stimulus dollars. He's made it very clear that money from stimulus dollars would not be replaced, and that, you know, the agencies and the interests of the state that were using federal stimulus dollars to get by aren't going to be able to do that anymore. And they are going to have to do something else.
But, all right, so we had a projected $8 billion budget shortfall. And was the budget cut? Where was this 55 point something or other billion dollar budget over 2 years? So let's say 27 each. Where was it cut?
Well, my colleague Bill Cohen, that was his first question. And it's because it really is hard to explain to people. There was an $8 billion budget deficit. We heard the governor say that during the State of the State. So $8 billion is a huge chunk of money. Where did it exactly come from? And when you look at the specifics, you can identify areas that got hit really hard. Certainly local governments, 25% cut in the first year of the budget, 50% cut in the second year of the budget. Higher education got hit a little bit. K through 12 education. And those two areas are interesting because, you know, the governor is trying to say that he's actually going to increase spending on higher education and K through 12 education. But in reality, it's a decrease because he's not replacing the federal stimulus dollars. He was very clear about that. And so essentially, it is a decrease in terms of the amount of money that they will have to spend. Those are two big areas you can look at and say, well, there were some arguably cuts made in these areas.
Cuts, but billions of dollars in cuts?
Well, and you know, there's also some savings that are being exacted through Medicaid, more federal dollars being drawn down to help support Medicaid, which is a huge, you know, 30-40% of the budget is Medicaid. And then, of course, you've got the revenue enhancements coming in from the sale of five prons.
But those are one time. After that, we have to start paying rent, don't we,
well,
as the state?
Yeah, not okay. Really. I mean, it's kind of a complicated scenario with the sale of prisons, and also, you know, there are some benefits to sales of prisons. For example, communities, once those prisons become privately run, now there's taxes that they have to pay because they weren't privately run before, and there weren't any taxes there. So these communities can benefit, and for a lot of, you know, prison communities, they're in areas where, you know, they need the tax dollars. But there's, you know, the state has to save a certain amount of money, 5%. The state has to be saving 5% for a prison to even be put out for private operation. And so prison sentencing reform has been offered as that's the way we're going to save money. And, you know, that's one area where everybody seems to be in agreement, oh, something has to be done. But for many years, nothing was done. And, you know, Kasich, along with Senator Bill Seitz and a couple of other folks, have said, okay, this is the year we're going to do it. So that's going to save us some money in terms of a 51,000 person population. They said 12,000 in the last year came in for only 1 year. If you can start saving on a little bit of the people who are coming in for only 1 year, you can actually start saving over the big picture.
But the question is, can they do it in a 2 year period, bring forth those savings in time to apply them to this?
That's a really good question. Well, and Governor Kasich also was clear about the first year of this budget is going to be the worst. That by the second year of the budget, if everything falls into place that he hopes will fall into place. I mean, Jobs Ohio gets going and the liquor department transfer is there and the prisons are sold and all these things. If all these things get going, then in the second year of the budget, that's going to start being some of the time that we're going to see some of these savings. But the first year, he said, is going to be really rough.
He said at the outset that, you know, we're not looking at this like we're going to cut this budget in half and we're going to look at it that way. That's not the first time that's been done.
No.
You know, there's nothing new about that.
No. No, and he also said he wanted to take the long field approach and look at this from a two-year perspective, mm-hmm. even though the budget does have to be balanced. You know, it does have to be balanced over a two-year period. You, other governors have, as the budget has gone through, I mean, Ted Strickland did this, where you'd get to these certain points and Strickland would make cuts to make sure it was balanced by the end of the year. And I don't know whether Governor Kasich will do that because he says he's looking at this longer, bigger picture. And like I said, there's all these other pieces that have to fall into place for everything to work in the end, I think.
Yeah. I just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. My guest is Karen Kassler. She's the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau Chief. If you have a question or comment, if you can squeeze them in between mine, please do. 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org, and we'll try to get your questions in to answer them. But there are a lot of unanswered questions, not only the press corps, but people across the state who have a stake in this.
Right, and a lot of them were at the Reif Center at the Capitol Theater last night for the town hall-style meeting. A lot of them were watching on the ohiochannel.org. A lot of them were watching on the Ohio Channel on PBS stations mm-hmm. around the state. And, you know, there are a lot of questions, and the questions are varied. I mean, the budget really does touch so many people in so many different ways. You know, the first gentleman who spoke last night at the town hall meeting asking a question about education for gifted and talented students, and where was the money for that? And that had been cut. I mean, that's an example of how wide the budget is and how much it really does reach each and every one of us. It's not just taxes. It's not just, you know, prisons. It's everybody everywhere. It touches your whole life, whether you have a child, whether you don't. You know, it's amazingly large.
The issue about Ohio Department of Development and where it's going to get its funding from for the Senate Bill 5, which is
Senate Bill 1, or actually House Bill 1.
House Bill 1.
Senate Bill 5 is the collective bargaining bill.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Jobs Ohio.
Jobs Ohio was House Bill
Danger
1.
Numbering them.
And they're all low numbers, which indicates the priority that they are to this administration. So Jobs Ohio is actually, that was passed by both the House and Senate and signed into law. And you know, the question had always been, how is it going to be funded? Because there are real constitutional questions about private money and public money and how can you mix them mm-hmm. and you can't give state money to private enterprise in the way that Jobs Ohio might want to do it.
In other words, without having the same kind of oversights
right.
that you would have with any expenditure of public money.
Right.
Okay.
And so what they're going to do is they're going to transfer the liquor department, essentially, the liquor enterprise, what they're calling it, which has always been making money. It's made money for the state for many years, to Jobs Ohio. And then what happens is Jobs Ohio provides a payment up front of $1.2 billion, which goes to take care of some things. And then the state still retains permitting and regulation and these sorts of things. And then the money can now be used to invest in private business, which is something that a lot of people have got a little weird about, that they didn't want state dollars invested in private business.
But they are state dollars until this budget's passed, ostensibly, right?
Yeah.
So we are taking state dollars and spending them up, even though we're just changing the name of them.
You could argue that, sure. And I mean, the whole idea and the way that it is explained to most people is, if the state had a share of, say, First Solar, which is a solar panel company up in Toledo, and that company's gone gangbusters and doing really well, wouldn't
right.
it be great if the state had a share of that and the state could be making money on these successful companies? Of course, the flip side of that is, what if the state invests in a company that doesn't do well, that loses gazillions of dollars? You know, then where's our liability? And so, you know, it's risky, but there are folks who will tell you that risk brings reward, and, and there is no real benefit without some risk.
Okay, so we're talking about $1.3 billion in revenue from liquor sales in the state of Ohio. That is money that's been going into the general revenue fund
right.
up till now.
Right.
So that means that's $1.3 billion less in the general revenue fund.
Right. When you look at the actual budget breakdown, 774 pages on the page that deals with the it's in the Department of Commerce, that does reflect that, that money is going to be gone in the second year. Because, 18 months they figure it's going to take for all this to kind of shake out with Jobs Ohio and the transfer of the liquor enterprise. And they say, Ohioans won't notice a difference. You go and buy your bottle of vodka, it won't make any difference. That's one thing, but then there's this other side of, where does the money go, and the operations that it helps support now, that money won't be there anymore and that sort of thing.
Robert from South Vienna, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My question is, last night when I was watching that, I mean, I heard him speak of the $14 billion we've lost, because the jobs just disappeared.
Yeah, payroll, I believe, has been lost.
Right. And, he ran on the platform that he was going to bring jobs here. But it seems like all this stuff that's going down now is just a smokescreen to keep him from having to answer to that. I mean, I'd like to know what he plans on doing about all these poor guys and women that are out here looking for jobs, and they're just like hundreds of jobs and thousands of people for each job, looking, thousands of applicants for each job. It just seems to me that he's letting the ball go.
Well, and he says that this budget will actually encourage growth, that's what his job is, and that's what Mark Kwame, who's going to be the director of Jobs Ohio, assuming he's allowed to be, given the fact that he's not an Ohio resident, but actually a resident of California, that's what their job is going to be, is to create jobs. And that's what he says this budget does, is that it takes down some of the, what he calls, the barriers to business. And he says he's getting calls from all over the country from businesses that are considering Ohio now where they weren't before, because there are tax incentives now. There are new rules with regard to fewer regulations on business, that there's more of an opportunity. Mark Kwame said yesterday, he's the director of Jobs Ohio, that he's now in the job of retaining business here in Ohio, that he's trying to keep businesses here. And, he'll cite American Greetings and Bob Evans as two examples of businesses that were thinking about leaving that aren't. And so the next step, obviously, is to bring jobs to Ohio. The other half of that is that the governor did not do draconian cuts to the safety net for people who are in a position now where they are still unemployed, they're still waiting for these jobs, and they need assistance at this time. He didn't kick anybody off Medicaid, according to him. He didn't have a huge cut for food banks.
We got to talk about Medicaid.
Well, we'll talk about Medicaid in a minute. But he says he's trying to help people who are in these dire circumstances right now. And the overall theory behind what he presented to us yesterday was that a rising tide lifts all boats, and that if we bring more jobs into Ohio, everybody benefits. And it remains to be seen. I mean, this is kind of an extraordinary document here in terms of what it does to try to bring more business here. It's a very business-friendly budget, from what I understand. And so that's supposed to bring more jobs here. I guess we have to wait and see. But one thing that a lot of folks have been saying is, we can't do things the way the government was doing them, the way the budgets had been done in the past. There had to be a new way, and this is certainly a new way.
We're going to be right back. My guest is Karen Kassler. She's the bureau chief of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Supporting 89.7 NPR News is easier than ever when you become a sustaining member. Sign up online at wosu.org/sustainer. As a sustaining member, your donation is automatic, monthly, and ongoing. No more letters in the mail, and your WOSU member card will renew automatically. Every year, we'll confirm your membership, and you can cancel at any time. For as little as $5 per month, you'll be supporting the programs you love. Become a sustaining member now at wosu.org/sustainer.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. And no one could have guessed on October 8, 1985, when Les Miserables opened in London, that it would become a worldwide phenomenon. But audiences embraced it from the start. Thursday night on WOSU-TV, watch the legendary musical celebrate its 25th birthday with an extraordinary concert. The presentation includes the October 2010 cast and members of the original 1985 London cast. Watch Les Miserables' 25th anniversary concert, Thursday night at 8 on WOSU-TV. It's 42 degrees in downtown Columbus, a little bit of drizzle this morning, and then clearing skies this afternoon, a high of 53. Clear skies tonight, a low of 39, and a nice day for Thursday, sunshine and a high of 66. Partly cloudy Thursday night, a low of 52. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guest is Karen Kassler. She's Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau Chief. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about Medicaid.
Oh, boy.
there are...
It's so complicated. That's why I say, oh, boy. It's you know, Medicaid, many years ago, George Voinovich, then Governor Voinovich, called it the Pac-Man of the budget because it really was taking a lot of the budget, 30% to 40% of the budget, depending on how you count it. And there was a slide last night and a slide during our presentation in the afternoon that we reporters saw where they pointed out that 1% of the Medicaid population spends like 24% of
it's the nursing home.
Right. And mm-hmm. then like 4% spends 51%. And the idea being that we've got to get a handle, you know, there's a certain group of people that are going to cost the system money and that you know, we're obligated to you know, fund that and everything. But then maybe there's that other 3% there between the 1% and the 4% that we can actually help and maybe, you know, do some things differently so that they're not consistently being readmitted. They're not using the resources like this, that maybe there's a better way to help them and save the state money at the same time. And so there's this so-called reform-oriented transformational office there in the governor's office that tries to bring in more of a what they're calling a person-centered approach to Medicaid and try to make it a little bit more bring everything sort of together. You know, they give an example of the waivers that are out there for Medicaid, that mm-hmm. there were, you know, 4, 5, 6 waivers or whatever. They're trying to bring that into one waiver to make it a little bit easier for people who are on Medicaid to get the services they need and maybe get rid of some of the duplicative services that are out there, get rid of some of the programs that do the same thing as another program does. And so this is, you know, this idea of this budget being balanced with a mix of spending cuts and government efficiencies, and that's kind of one of the government efficiencies. And certainly, I mean, how many years did we hear about Medicaid blue ribbon task forces suggesting all sorts of ways to improve Medicaid? Maybe this is finally one that, you know, might actually wring some savings out of this system, because certainly everybody, you know, everybody talks about waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicaid and that sort of thing. Is there really enough of that to bring down the cost in the system? And certainly the governor's people think that there is, and they're trying to do it.
There's the line item for administration in Medicaid is zeroed out.
Right.
What does that mean?
There's a lot of that in the budget.
Obvious.
Yeah. No, and it's about taking Medicaid dollars from other programs and bringing them in. He brings up an example. The Department of Aging had about $500,000 Medicaid dollars where the director said, I don't need this money. Why don't you move this money to somewhere where it can be used? And so he brings that up as an example of the kinds of money shuffling he's doing. And also there's a tremendous drawdown of federal dollars. They're trying to take every federal dollar they can in Medicaid and bring it into the state to try to pay for some of these costs. So the zeroing out, it looks really scary. I mean, when you go through this budget and start seeing areas that have been zeroed mm-hmm. out, it does look like there's these huge cuts, but sometimes it's a matter of, you know, federal stimulus dollars that aren't being replaced, or it's a matter of we're taking this money not from this pot, but from this pot. And so, you know, there's an argument that that's a little bit of smoke and mirrors and hard to understand. But, you know, we're also being told that this is a transformational budget that's nothing like anything we've ever seen before.
Well, it's hard to understand. It's hard to say just because I don't understand it means it's smoke and mirrors. But it just means I don't understand it. But it is different. Okay, so I go back to the initial issue of where's the $8 billion or even $4 billion being cut?
And the best answer to that.
It's not adding up to even $4 billion yet.
Yeah, the best answer to that is it really is a mix of spending cuts, like the cuts to the local government fund and K through 12 education. And I know they're going to argue and say it's not a spending cut to education, but, you know, you can ask the schools if it is. Mm-hmm. And then these government efficiencies, these areas where they're telling local governments and other entities, hey, you can have new rules and new efficiencies, like this idea of shared services. You need, according to the governor, to be able to give school districts and local governments the opportunity to pool together on administrative costs and, you know, put your employees in a state-managed healthcare pool and these sorts of things. And, of course, he brings up, he says the savings from the collective bargaining bill are not in this budget, but certainly there are several references to, well, the $1 billion in savings that local governments will see from collective bargaining reform. So he says it's not in the budget, but certainly he's hoping that there will be savings and that local governments will be able to capitalize on those.
Okay, so there's a 50% budget cut over the course of the 2-year period to local government fund, and that was not unexpected, reports WOSU San Hendren, but it hurts.
Oh, yeah.
The sky is falling.
Upper Arlington City Manager Virginia Barney is only half joking. She says the state money is sorely needed.
It goes into our general fund, which then supports our safety forces, our recreation programs, our senior center, capital improvements. It really is an integral part of our services to our community.
Okay, so some folks are saying that the governor doesn't raise taxes in his budget. He just forces local governments to do the job for
him. That was
him.
One of the questions last night at the town hall meeting. Isn't this just a way to pass those costs on to local governments who will pass those costs on to their residents in the form of higher taxes? And, you know, I talked to the deputy mayor of Toledo last night who said we were budgeting for a 50% cut in the first year, so we were really not shocked by this, and certainly no community was shocked, but that, like you said, that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. The governor said last night that, you know, any community that does raise taxes, though, based on this, you got to understand that that could potentially drive out jobs. There's an argument for that, but then there's also the idea of, well, where do you get the money for services that people expect you to provide as a city? And, you know, once again, you can turn back to collective bargaining reform. That's going to be a way that some cities can wring out some savings. But there's also some other things that the state says that they're going to do. For example, the shared services idea. They say they're going to reduce mandates so that the cities that are required to do certain things by the state, they're not going to have to do that anymore. You know, there are some issues with prevailing wage. They're not going to have to pay union-scale wages on some construction
if they're
contracts.
Lucky enough to have construction contracts right now.
Yeah, and so there's also little things, like I thought this was kind of interesting, that there can be online advertising advertising. The colleges and local governments and schools are already raising money from advertising, and you can do that online now with this budget. There's also, you know, some forms of relief. For example, these ads that have to be put in the paper, these public notice ads that cost communities a fair amount of money. Apparently, they don't have to do that anymore, but they were clear in making, you know, in the press briefing where all the newspapers were, they were clear in saying, but we're not leaving out the newspapers. There's going to be other, you know, things that we'll have to do in terms of public notice. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that they're changing. They're saying that, you know, like, for example, these public notices can go to a website instead of the newspaper and save money. And, you know, but whether they really add up to the amount of money that local communities are going to lose, not only with this, but also potentially with the loss of estate tax money. You know, this is going to be really hard for some local communities to deal with. And the other thing that he also mentions is that at least four communities in the state are going to benefit from casino revenues. Once again, you can make a huge argument of, well, that's not revenue that's guaranteed. And the way that casinos have been operating in the last couple of years, their attendance is going down and that sort of thing. So that there may not be the jackpot, if you'll pardon the pun, for communities through casinos.
And at least not, again, during the two-year budget cycle that we're talking about right now.
Right, right. But, you know, this budget, too, the governor talked about being this long-term thing to kind of – it's almost, you know, in a way, weaning these communities and everything off revenue sources that had been really, you know, necessary and been relied upon. You know, Kasich says they're not going to be replaced. Stimulus dollars, these sorts of things. And so it's the first year is going to be really challenging, I think, for a lot of different areas of the budget. And, you know, when we saw the briefing yesterday, the same and again, the press briefing yesterday afternoon that reporters got was very similar to the town hall meeting that everybody could see last night. He only went through a couple of areas of the budget. I mean, the biggest ones, you know, Medicaid and local government fund and K through 12 education, higher education, and the Jobs Ohio issue. But there are other areas of the budget that really weren't looked at in great detail that we're going to find out over the next couple of days.
Right.
Wow. I mean, libraries. It didn't even come up until last night.
Five percent cut. After years of
after
cuts
years, yes. And that's $168 million. That's a lot of money, and a lot of local libraries really depend on that. This state has some fantastic libraries, and they're hurting a little bit. I think some of them are saying, well, we were expecting worse, but still, 5% is a lot. That's a lot to deal with.
Susan from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for the program.
You're welcome.
I have a general concern and question about both the state of the state address and the budget. There seems to be a kind of growing understanding or growing idea that's being sold that what's good for business is good for government, that government interests and business interests are aligned. And if we can only just run our governments the way we run our businesses, everything will be fine. But business interest and government interest are not the same. And business interests include low wages, poor benefits, the destruction of unions. And a state where business and government interests are one is fascism. So I'd just like to hear your...
You're not the first person I've heard say that. So certainly that argument has been made, especially by the folks who have been coming out to the State House to protest the collective bargaining bill. You know, this idea that business runs everything right, certainly you can point to many examples of that not being the case, even looking at the governor's former employer, Lehman Brothers, which was the largest bankruptcy in U.S. history, I believe, at the time it happened. But that's certainly the idea that Governor Kasich and Mark Kwame and his team have, is that business has got the idea right and that they're going to try to reform government based on the principles of, you know, flexibility, being able to work a little bit with the market, being able to move a little bit faster rather than, as Mark Kwame said yesterday, moving at the speed of statute, which is slower and more, I guess,
deliberative.
It's a really interesting discussion to have, though, the idea that, you know, does business have it right? Does government have it right? Or really, do we want a mix of government and business in terms of how we want the people who administer our budget to run things? And so, like I said, you're not the first person I've heard say that, and that is certainly going to be a theme I think we're going to hear over time.
The governor made the point, and thank you, Susan, for your call. Appreciate it. the governor made the point that this is not politics. This is not about politics. This is not a political budget over and over and over again. Joe Hallett in the Dispatch made the salient point, however, that this is about ideology.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
I mean, so
right.
Maybe it's not
and,
about
and for
politics.
Some people, ideology is politics. And you know, you can make the argument when you're listening to this, when he says it's not about politics and you've got protesters standing outside screaming, that there is definitely something political going on here. You know, Kasich, though, is trying to tackle issues that have plagued both parties over the last how many years? I mean, this whole idea of nursing homes and the cuts to nursing homes. For years, we've heard about this, and slight changes were made, but never enough that both parties said they were satisfied. Sentencing reform is another area where everybody seemed to agree it needed to be done, but it didn't get done. And Kasich continually makes the point that it didn't get done because of politics. Now, you know, that's certainly a way to explain it. But to say that this budget doesn't have politics in it, I think, is to be naive, because it certainly does have ideology in it. And ideology, for many people, is how they form their political point of view.
David in North Columbus, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
The president's or the thought process, I appreciate the conversation, but at the end of the day, there's still a fiscal responsibility that needs to be put in play, and it's going to hurt everywhere. There's a lot of sad situations, but the reality is half the people in this country don't pay taxes, and you can't afford a house you can't afford. And it either is our burden to solve it or put that burden on our children. You've got to choose.
Yeah, you know, David, exactly. And my question remains, where are the $8 billion in cuts coming from?
Well, and to get a little bit to David's point, because I've heard what he said before, it really does come down to the idea of what do you want government to do? And I think this is a conversation that we're starting to have now. I talked to a person last night at the town hall meeting who was saying, you know, there's an urgency in this budget that this person had never seen before, that there are real ideas of things that need to be solved and need to be dealt with. And I think maybe finally we are going to start having the conversation about what do we want government to do, and do we want government to pay for this, to pay for this, to pay for this? And if not, how are people going to receive those services or do what they're what they want to do. This whole idea of vouchers, the governor's budget expands, doubles the EdChoice voucher program. He says he's not trying to tear apart public schools. But, you know, that really brings up an issue of do you want the government in your schools? And is that how you want? Do you want public education or do you want something else? And certainly the governor sends his kids to private school, but he says he's a product of public school. You know, he says he wants to fix the public schools, but there are others who say they would rather see a different way of doing public education. And you know, I know what the caller is saying here with regard to individual kinds of responsibility and what do individuals, what are their roles in the budget and in the economy and in society at large. And that's, you know, there are a lot of issues surrounding that, but certainly this budget does not deal with you know, cutting people off because they can't afford certain things. You know, there's money for food banks. There's money for Medicaid. There's money for different areas. And so, you know, it's an interesting idea that's out there in terms of what should the government be paying for and who should be responsible for these things when they don't work out or when people need help.
David?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay. Well, thanks for your call.
I appreciate it. It's not going to be easy. That's the point is everybody is in favor of cutting until it affects them.
Absolutely.
Oh, not the libraries. I love the libraries. And then a person that likes parks says anything but the parks.
Absolutely. You're exactly right.
And I want to get to those parks, too, because one of the things that would happen with the state parks would be open for oil and natural gas drilling.
Yes, and timber logging as well.
David, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Take care.
And that's one thing I think we can agree on is that you know, everybody wants to cut. Everybody thinks cutting is a great idea until it starts hitting you and your constituency and your community. And then it becomes, oh, wait a minute, I you know, the widgets that have been out there that the Dispatch and the Plain Dealer and other papers have put together that say, okay, you want a balanced budget. You figure it
out. I've enjoyed those.
Those are great because it really does give you an idea of if you cut this, then this happens. And, you know, it's very easy to say, well, what's this program do? This program does this, and if you get rid of this, then this bad thing happens. And so, you know, you have to figure out long term, if you make these cuts, are you willing to take the heat for what you did, and what are you going to do to maybe make it a little bit less painful? So budgeting isn't just zeroing out a line and saying, hey, this is where we're going to go. So
we have to take another break. My guest is Karen Kassler. She's the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau Chief. We have some calls we want to get to. We'll do that when we return. If you want to email us, you can go to allsides@wosu.org. We want to talk about that oil and gas drilling, natural gas drilling in state parks. We want to talk about some of the oversight agencies. Consumers Council's been cut, Philly, and what's going to happen, the Ohio EPA, that sort of thing. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and in recognition of Sunshine Week, we'll talk about the importance of open government and freedom of information in Ohio and nationally. Join us for that discussion beginning at 11.
Support for 89.7 comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts. The 2011 lecture series continues with American Politics at the Breaking Point, looking at the relationship between media and politics, Tuesday, March 22nd at 7 p.m. Details at mccoycenter.org.
It's 42 degrees in downtown Columbus, a chance of a little rain this morning, then gradually clearing skies today, a high of 53. Clear skies tonight, a low of 39 degrees. Sunshine and a nice day for Thursday with a high of 66. A few clouds Thursday night, a low of 52. And a slight chance of rain on Friday, a high of 66. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I was just saying that there's so much to talk about. I feel like it's like a full employment job for me.
We've definitely, that's one thing. We've gotten a lot of attention at the State House. You know, I've worked at the State House now for 7 years.
Right.
And there are times when you don't ever see anybody down there, you know. And the last couple of weeks has been insane with national coverage and everything. It's been great. I love it because it's really important stuff.
And it's always been really important stuff as someone who's kind of covered it closely for 10 years and from afar for 20 years. It's always been important, so I appreciate that. I want to get to those other issues, but I also want to get to Doug, who's been waiting for quite a while. Doug, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hi, Ann. I think this is just a total race to the bottom, and, you know, if we want businesses to flock to Ohio, how about just paying all workers $6 an hour and getting rid of child labor laws? that'll bring them in. And what's happening is what Naomi Klein calls the shock doctrine, and people should look that up. And it's important. His Governor Kasich's polling numbers are brutal. It gets buried in the newspaper.
They're very low.
But it's just important for people to stand up against this and, boycott. We need to boycott businesses that support the governor. You know, it's ludicrous, the Dispatch top headline, screaming headline, budget pain spread around when most Ohioans want a combination of tax cuts and, you know, spending cuts. But there's, you know, they're talking about getting rid of the estate tax at a time like this,
which is another going to impact local governments the most.
It's total class warfare. That's my opinion.
Okay.
Well, and again, not the first time I've heard someone use that exact phrase, race to the bottom. There's a lot of people who are very concerned about the influence of business on government and feeling like, you know, government business doesn't always get it right. Why are we focusing solely on how business does things instead of, you know, another way of doing things? So not the first time I've heard that exact phrase at all.
Doug, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Thanks for waiting. Let's go back to the issues of the oversight agencies. Ohio Consumers Council cut by 50% over the two-year period. They're funded through utility assessments, so any cut to their budget doesn't really go to helping the budget deficit, does it? Or are they taking money now from utility assessments that would...
That's my understanding, that this is that the utility assessments go into the general revenue fund. The general revenue fund then funds,
doles it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the way I understand it. But, yeah, the Consumers Council getting a huge hit, that's one I think was kind of a surprise to some folks.
The Inspector General's office took a hit.
Yes.
The Department of Agriculture.
Now, the Inspector General's office over the last couple of years did add a lot of people. And so now the Inspector General.
7%.
Yeah. And so now the Inspector General, we have a new Inspector General. So there's an argument that maybe that was a bigger office than it needed to be. But yeah, they took a little bit of a hit.
The Ohio Environmental Protection Agency,
yes.
Ohio EPA,
yes.
took a hit.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I can't remember the exact – I think it's around 19% or something like that. But, yeah, they took a hit as well. There's a lot of state agencies.
So let's just get out of the way of business. That seems – and EPA's been one of those agencies.
Right. And, you've got environmentalists who are issuing statements saying that it's going to affect Ohio's water quality and air quality. And that's a little bit of a concern. But, it's not a little bit of a concern, but I'm there's the idea that these regulations that are going to be quote streamlined, maybe some of them are repetitive. It's so difficult to try to figure out what the impact of cutting these agencies would be, and where the actual cuts do take place. Who do you cut when you cut 20% out of somebody's budget? Who actually gets the axe? Is it somebody who is doing important work on water and sewer and that sort of thing? And if so, how is that going to affect a local community? And so I'm really interested and a little bit worried to see how some of these agencies, when they make the cuts, what really happens.
Well, in something like the Ohio EPA, it's very heavy in that people on the ground mm-hmm. doing the inspections, mm-hmm. The scientists that are out there measuring the water levels and all that kind of stuff that they do that I also don't understand, but it's also heavy on the legal side.
Sure.
There's a lot of litigation that goes along with this, a lot of stuff like that.
And
where do you cut? Which side
right.
of the equation?
And I know the governor's office has, and other folks have complained about the difficulty in permitting and the
right.
length of time it takes to get a
but
permit.
But this isn't
going to
speed up permitting, is it?
I can't imagine how, because, you've got to get into the regulations and figure out why they were done in the way that they were done. And so perhaps that's what this Common Sense Initiative office mm-hmm. that Mary Taylor's heading up is going to start dealing with it.
Right.
Maybe if the regulations change, then that can justify the fewer people that work at the agency. But initially, it looks a little scary.
The state parks would be open for oil and natural gas drilling. Now, this wasn't exactly in the bill.
Yeah.
But I guess the Ohio Department of Natural Resources has forwarded a section of the proposed budget bill that would give the agency the authority to lease state parkland.
Right.
Okay.
Which, of course, that was talked about. This is not a new idea. That was talked about even in the last budget, and it was universally decried by environmentalists who say that, there's no way to do it without damaging the parks in some way in terms of the equipment showing up and it makes a terrible mess and it's a terrible smell and it potentially could damage tourism in communities that depend on people coming to these parks to camp and hang out and spend time with their families and that sort of thing. So, and there is also the Sierra Club did a study last year with a couple of environmental groups that said that the logging program that is in existence at the Shawnee State Park mm-hmm. Actually costs more money than it brings in. So they kind of suggested that maybe logging isn't going to be the gold mine that maybe some people might think it would be.
614-292-8513. We still have a few minutes left with Karen Kassler. She's the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau Chief. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Sarah. She writes, "I am sorry to bring up schools again,
that's
but
all right.
I really do."
It's huge. It's a huge portion
I'll tell
of the budget.
You, I said earlier, we'll be having a program on schools. No one worry. This
sure.
is not the last program on the budget. But I am sorry to bring up schools again, but I really don't understand the K-12 schools part of the budget. The budget mentions teacher bonuses being linked to student performances, but what I worry about is that problem kids, that's in a quotation marks, will become, quote-unquote, unwanted in the classroom because if they are not going to help Because if they are not going to help get test scores up, then I guess what good are they?
Well,
and was the K-12 budget cut, and doesn't mentioning bonuses bring SB 5 issues into the budget?
Well, the merit pay issue, that's a serious concern for a lot of teachers. How would they be evaluated? How would they actually get a merit bonus? And I guess we're going to have to wait for the legislation that accompanies this budget to really spell that kind of thing out. You know, Governor Kasich said last night, for example, if a teacher teaches more than a year's worth of content, we are going to pay that teacher more. I don't know how you measure that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of teachers complain that they don't ever get measured, but they're always measured by other people. They're measured by administrators. They're not measured by their own peers. And so it's very hard for them to really understand the measurement and really conform to it, so to speak. So that's a real issue that I think we're going to have to wait and see how that shakes out. And in terms of the actual money, actual dollars, because the stimulus dollars are not being replaced, it does amount to less money for the schools. So, you know, the governor's office is saying that they're going to spend more. They're actually going to, 2% in the first year. 2% in the first year, 1.5% increase in the second. But when you start taking out the stimulus dollars,
right,
that's not how it really comes out at all. But he said he was going to do that. So this is not... You know, it's not like he's hiding that the stimulus dollars won't be replaced. He said that they weren't going to be replaced.
Email from Kimberly. There was a website where citizens could make suggestions on how to balance the state budget. I never heard anything on my pet suggestion, though. I think that state sales tax should be applied to take out food at restaurants the same way it is to dine in. If I go to Wendy's and get my food on a tray, I pay sales tax. If I get my food in a bag, I don't pay sales tax. What's the sense in that?
Well, there were not going to be any tax increases in this budget in any way.
But revenue enhancements?
And the governor did say yesterday that he thinks that we have to look at legitimate user fees, which are, you know, people who are anti-tax increases do consider legitimate user fees to be an option that's not a tax increase. That's when a person who actually uses the service
like
kind of
state
pays.
Like a state
park. Yeah. And so, you know, you may see user fees. He says that they're not really in this budget, but you may see user fees over time that he may be comfortable with. And certainly the one area that I think is interesting that he thinks we're not paying enough, that isn't paying enough in taxes, is the casinos. And he says he's bringing in a casino expert to deal with the issue of electronic slot machines at the racetracks, not in this budget, but could potentially be in the next budget. But he says that that's one area where there isn't enough tax being paid, but there's really nothing that Ohioans can do about that unless they go back to the Constitution.
So what about those struggling the most in Ohio? The governor said that they are safe.
We needed to protect the most vulnerable. You cannot damage those who are the least of them in our society. At the end of the day, we'll answer for that.
So Bill Faith of Ohio and Lisa Hamler-Fugit of the Second Harvest Food Bank, they're both satisfied with the budget as it stands.
Well, Bill Faith did not. He said his agency did not get cut they were okay. Lisa Hamler-Fugit's food bank's organization got a bit of a cut, but she said she told me last night that this is a budget that she feels like is fluid, that there's a process here, there's a real call to work together, and she was really encouraged by what she heard. So,
but there are other little cuts. I mean, there's cuts to the daycare subsidies.
Sure, and there's little cuts all around, and that's the kind of thing that the next couple of days we're all going to go through the 774 pages of this budget and start figuring out what exactly is this. You know, there was a zeroing out of a pot that goes to children's hospitals. There were some other big cuts or zeroing outs that, you know, potentially could have an impact. And so as we dig down through this thing, we're going to find these little areas where, you know, all of a sudden, hey, this money's not there anymore.
Mark from Brookfield, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, ladies. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm 56 years old. I've been a citizen of this great state of Ohio for 51 years, and I've watched these blowbacks come and go left and right. But the Republicans and this governor have succeeded in stealing the collective bargaining rights of all the middle-class workers in the state of Ohio. My question to you is this. What is this governor asking of the largest moneymakers in this state? What is the burden they're being asked to carry? I haven't heard him discuss anything about that. I'm going to hang up now and get your answer. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. So That's a question that's asked.
Well, and I think a lot of his philosophy is that those are the people who create the jobs, we need to keep them around. I'm certain that's the philosophy of some folks out there. And it's a question that has been asked over and over. The idea of collective bargaining, though, being over is really not the case, because the bill does still have to pass the House and sign by the governor, and then it will probably, I mean, almost certainly go to the ballot. So there is the possibility that that issue will not stand over time. Of course, we're sitting here in March right now, and election wouldn't be till November. So it'll be interesting to see if the frustration over the collective bargaining bill would actually carry through and go to, you know, turn it over. But, you know, that is definitely something that a lot of groups have said, that, you know, what about the top levels? What about the top earners?
William in Cleveland, you're on the air. We're running out of time, but I wanted to squeeze you in.
I just wish the governor would live up to his promise and stop lying to the people and stop trying to take the collective bargaining away from the rest of the country.
Okay, I thought you were going to talk about cuts to the EPA.
Oh yeah. You cut the EPA, that leave the door open for more food poisoning and all other type of trouble. That just...
Well,
that's waiting to happen.
Actually, foodborne illnesses and that sort of thing are actually done through the Department of Agriculture, which also did take a hit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, this idea of what happens, like I said, what happens when you cut the budget? Do you actually, what is the final impact? It's a scary process potentially to follow, but potentially it also could bring some actual savings. Who knows?
Well, we've got
we'll be watching.
Sorry to everybody, and thank you, William, for that call. Sorry to everybody that did not get on the program today to talk. Sorry about all the emails we did not get to. However, this is just the first of several programs. Tomorrow we start looking at the mental health segment of the two-year state budget that the governor's proposed. And
another big area of reforms.
Big area of reforms and very complicated. We'll look more at EPA and the Department of Agriculture. We'll look more at Consumers Council and the cuts there. We'll look more at education, of course, and the impact of the cuts to the local government fund. So we were just getting started, folks. Thanks for listening today. And thank you, Karen Kassler, for joining us.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
That's all the time we have. This is All Sides on 89.7. NPR News.